Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. What's the best way to memorialize the complete history of Faneuil Hall? You may know that it's one of Boston's major attractions. It gets about 20 million visitors every year. It's also obviously named after 18th century merchant Peter Faneuil. You may also know that it's called the Cradle of Liberty because revolutionary patriots met at the hall to organize against the British, and that later Faneuil Hall also drew the likes of Susan B. Anthony, who argued for suffrage, and Frederick Douglass, even, who in 1849 thundered from Faneuil Hall, quote, "With 18 millions of free men standing upon the quivering hearts of 3 million slaves, my sympathies, of course, must be with the oppressed. I am among them, and you are treading them beneath your feet." And yet, did you know that Peter Faneuil himself made his wealth trading enslaved people? That there was a slave market at Merchants Row right next to Faneuil Hall? Where are the markers for this part of Faneuil Hall's history? How should it be memorialized? Well, today, we want to hear a couple of different perspectives on that very important question. And joining us now to talk through it is Kevin Peterson. He's the executive director of the New Democracy Coalition and a senior fellow at the Center for Collaborative Leadership at UMass Boston. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Good to be here.
It's great to have you.
Yeah.
Also with us is Stephen Locke. He's one of Boston's 2018 Artists in Residence. He's also a professor at Mass Art. Stephen Locke, welcome to you as well.
Meghna, it's good to be with you. Kevin, it's good to be with you,
hey,
too.
And listeners, I want to ask you, how do you think it's best to memorialize, to honor, to recognize this complex history of what happened at the ground where Faneuil Hall stands? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Now, Kevin and Stephen, before I sort of get to the ideas that you have on how to memorialize this, I wanted to actually start with a more general question for both of you. When you go to Faneuil Hall today and you walk about the buildings and the site there, what do you see? What do you feel? What is the experience like for you?
I think, well, for me, Kevin, I don't see myself, quite frankly. I grew up in a city like Boston, Philadelphia, so we have Independence Hall. So I have a sense of civic space, particularly old civic space, and have a sense of, around how that space is organized. And when I go to the Faneuil Hall Marketplace area, although I know the history, I don't see myself represented in any significant way. And that's a problem not only for my generation, but for generations that will come, of Bostonians in particular, but also the 20 million people who come through the marketplace each year. They don't see Boston's complete history, and that's problematic.
Mm. And Stephen, what about you?
I see this really vibrant area that's filled with commerce and tourism and students, all sorts of people engaged with the history of Boston, the Freedom Trail. I see the Rangers. I see all that stuff. But also, as an artist, I'm trained to notice what's missing.
Right.
And I also notice what's present. We memorialize a lot of things in that area of the city. And the thing that we do not memorialize by choice, not by circumstance, but by choice, we do not memorialize the people who built that building.
Mm-hmm.
And so I notice that. I notice all the other stuff, too. It's a really vibrant, exciting place. It's a beautiful part of the city.
Right.
But it's also a slave market.
Exactly. So that's the thing. Like, when your eyes are opened to the truth, the full truth of the history of Faneuil Hall, the land, the building, Peter Faneuil himself, the kind of painful irony that we see a lot of commerce there, and yet it was built upon the commerce of this buying and selling of African lives. It's just, it's amazing that there isn't any recognition, really, that I can think of right now, of that fact at the site right now.
There's one tiny recognition. There's a plaque on the side of Faneuil Hall that says, "Still in use by a free people." And that notion that it's a free people that use Faneuil Hall, that's really the only sort of nod to its history.
And then what's so difficult about the contradiction of the space as it's now composed is that there are so many wonderful things that have gone on that have been about liberty. Mm-hmm. We remember Crispus Attucks, for example, as being probably the first person to die in what's known as the Revolutionary War.
Killed
in the Boston Massacre. Only two blocks away from Faneuil Hall. He was so honored and revered by his by the city's fathers that his body was laid in state, where? At Faneuil Hall for 3 days. So there are a lot of positive things that we can focus on in a ground that is unfortunately not so hallowed and that's stained by the blood of slaves.
Yeah. So then this question, how do we as a city acknowledge that history? You guys have different ideas about that. So let me, Kevin, or maybe some overlapping ideas. Yeah. But I want to get into the specifics. So Kevin, you've been advocating to rename Faneuil Hall.
I've suggested in the spirit of what's been happening around the country, Confederate monuments have been coming down across the South. Some of our major universities, even in the Northeast, Harvard, Yale, and Princeton, have repurposed and renamed edifices that are on that campus because they're connected to slavery. I say symbolically, we rename Faneuil Hall. We don't name every edifice that's named after a slaveholder who may be connected to Boston. That would be exhaustive and redundant. It would cost a lot of money. But we focus on a place like Faneuil Hall, which has a sort of mixed history, but one that's really connected to the agony of people being enslaved. So we focus on Faneuil Hall, renaming it, and having it always stand as an opportunity for conversations around reconciliation and around re-engaging citizens across the city.
Renaming
in conversation.
It to what?
Crispus Attucks Hall is I think would be a fitting place because of Mr. Hall's connection. I mean, Crispus Attucks' connection to that geographical space.
Yeah. And Stephen Locke, you're an artist in residence for the City of Boston, professor
right.
of Mass Art.
Right.
You've got a different idea.
Well, you know, I think that it's really hard to live with history. And I think history is not black, it's not white, it's not colonial, it's just history. And the problem is that one history has been privileged over another. And so to rename Faneuil Hall is one way to deal with history. But I don't want to let Peter Faneuil or Andrew Faneuil off the hook. I want everyone who comes to Boston to know that those people were slavers. And I want people to know that the cradle of liberty was built by slavers. Mm. So I understand the wound that people experience when they're there. As an artist, I'm taught to produce objects that deal with history. And over the course of my career, my work has dealt with loss and absence and things like that. So I propose building a plate, just a simple bronze plate that's roughly the size of a traditional auction block. Make it in bronze because that is the language of memorial architecture down there.
Mm-hmm.
Have it set into the hardscape so it wouldn't protrude. It would actually just be the footprint of an auction block. In raised lettering, it will have a map of the triangular trade, which will show where people came from, the transfer of goods and people. And it will be titled the Auction Block Memorial, a site dedicated to those Africans and African Americans whose kidnapping and enslavement financed the building of Faneuil Hall. Because that's the story.
Mm-hmm.
And the notion that this thing would be present in the hardscape and people could walk on it or avoid it, like we do all history, right? But it would be present, it would be physically present, and it would be heated to the temperature of a human body. So when you touch it, it would evoke the presence of those people who were lost. And I agree with Kevin about Crispus Attucks. Crispus Attucks deserves a fitting memorial for his sacrifice to this nation. Mm. And he does not have one.
Mm. So I want to know just what you guys think of each other's ideas, because they're two different takes. Again, they're not mutually exclusive, but they're two different takes on this question of memorialization. And so Kevin, when you hear of Stephen's idea for this at grade level memorial that would evoke the auction block, what do you think?
I think it's a lovely idea. And one doesn't cancel out the others, as you said. I think that we can walk and chew gum at the same time,
right.
Even historically. I think that it's problematic for many Bostonians of color who now know the history or coming to know the history in a fuller light over the last year or year and a half. So, it really hurts their heart that there is this edifice that that is iconic but represents something that is very, very painful. And some folks have said to me that it would be unconscionable for an edifice that represented the success of a German traitor under Hitler, who was a supporter, to have that in Brookline or a majority Jewish community, for example. It would be painful for someone in the East Boston, where there was historically an Italian community, to have someone who was a supporter of Mussolini, for example, in their community. So there, what I'm hoping that folks should understand, not Mr. Locke. I think he's clear in terms of his sympathy. But I would hope that others who are not of color, what they would try to understand is that this edifice is painful, and that we don't erase history by assigning a new utility to the building. We're adding to the, in some ways, the painfully rich history. Because blacks had a important role over in the Faneuil Hall area. And I just wanted to say something else. Not only were the slaves sold at Merchants Row, but the merchandise, the cotton that came to Merchants Row came from the South. So you also had this other layer of misery and other aspects of slavery that when black people look at that building and reminisce it in its fullness, they have to be a little hurt.
So I want to come back to, you brought up a couple of really, really important points. I want to come back to them in a second, but I did promise Stephen a chance to respond to what Kevin's idea of changing the name of Faneuil Hall entirely.
Well, you know, I understand the desire to do that, and I understand the logic behind it. I don't agree, and I love the fact that, you know, we don't have this sort of monolithic idea about black people that they all agree on the same thing, that, you know, there's all different kinds of thoughts about history. I think it's very hard to deal with America as a black person. And Faneuil Hall is just a subset of that. Mm-hmm. Like every time I put on a cotton shirt, I think about my family. Mm-hmm. So that history is part of the weight that black people have to bear. What I want to have happen is I want to produce an object that's going to share that burden on the people who created it. Because we always talk about slavery, but we never talk about the people who enslaved people. Like, slavery just, like, happened. Like, oh, there were all these slaves. Well, where'd they come from? Like, they were enslaved. People were, you know how hard it is to pick cotton? Mm-hmm. It is so hard to pick cotton that you have to drag people from Africa in chains and make them do it. That's how hard it is to pick cotton. And that is the foundational crop of this country. And understanding that in relationship, that's why it's an auction block, because the auction block is the site in black American life where people were transformed from subjects into objects, where they were turned from humans into slaves.
So I just want to jump in here and remind listeners that we're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And we're talking about how to memorialize, how to best memorialize the truly complex history of Faneuil Hall, the land that it sits on, the man that it's currently named after, given the complex history of the enslavement of people, of colonial New England, of colonial Boston, and of modern-day Boston as well. So I'd love to hear your thoughts, right? 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Now, you know, in the several years now that we've been having this conversation about accurate memorialization of complex history.
Right.
It has been hard not to get the conversation to end up in a really reductive place. So I'm going to try hard to avoid that.
Okay.
But at the same time, you know, there are a lot of people out there who, upon hearing, for example, the idea of a name change, might say, I understand that we need to raise up the awareness and the acceptance and the engagement of this history that we haven't confronted so far as a community. But what's your response to folks who say that might privilege, you know, this that part of American history over what we're privileging now? That it's sort of like focusing on one area versus the other. That it's a zero sum game, essentially.
Kind of like reverse discrimination or something like that.
I don't
historical?
Know. I mean, I think some people might. I mean, that's essentially what they're asking when they say, "Aren't you erasing history?"
Well,
right?
If they would put it that way, as you put it, I would say no. It's affirmative history. We're raising up history that's been suppressed. I'm stunned almost daily now about how people say that, oh, if you change the name, you're erasing history. Well, no. Well, what about the history of all those people whose identity, whose livelihood, whose culture, whose literature has been suppressed and reduced to insignificance in this city? You know, there is this phrase around, and I don't mean to go on too long, but there's this phrase about, you know, not being able to heal the present without referencing the history. Late last year, we read through an agonizing series of articles in the Boston Globe, and we wonder why we are where we are as a city in terms of how its black people are treated. That's the blunt assessment of it. Well, I think part of that is because we haven't really addressed some of the deep wounds and some of the suppressed narratives of our history, where black people were relegated to in slavery in this city, but also relegated to second-class citizens, pushed from Beacon Hill up to currently Mattapan, forced migration in terms of housing plan. There's a problem in the city of Boston. You got to get to that problem, and I think one way is to use the metaphor of history.
You know, I just want to jump in here for a second, because also Peter Faneuil presents kind of an interesting quandary here, because he's not, you know, one of the pantheon of the founding fathers.
That's right.
Right?
That's,
I mean,
right.
He's a merchant. He was a merchant. A French Huguenot. I get it. Like, his own family history was one of fleeing persecution in Europe. But
probably now, like a Donald Trump of his day.
But you know, so it's not as if it's like John Adams Hall that we're talking about here.
But you know, Magna, this is the thing. Like, people are not all good or all bad.
That's right.
And there's a way in which the narrative that has been currently put forward about Peter Faneuil Hall is that he's all good. He's benevolent. He's the jolly bachelor. Like, all that sort of stuff. The truth of the matter is that he trafficked in human beings. And because he trafficked in human beings and made an enormous fortune doing it, he was able to give a gift to the city. That gift is tainted with the blood of enslaved people. So we have to deal with that. How we deal with that is at issue, but we have to deal with that. And I agree with this whole idea. When we were selected as a Boston artist in residence, we were told to look at the city through a lens of resilience and racial equity, mm-hmm. right? If we don't look at Boston's history of enslavement, we can't go forward. Yeah. We have to look at this in its context.
Well, so let me just turn back to Kevin here for a second. I'm wondering what you think of the idea of, given what Stephen just said, it made me wonder, preserving the name of Faneuil Hall, but at the same time, whether it's through a memorial like the one Stephen's proposing or another one, have also front and center a very visual, impactful, engaging reminder that this too is a major part of the meaning of the word Faneuil, the enslavement of people.
Right.
So that it's almost a confrontational memorial. Not just, you know, one in name only.
I mean, I don't disagree with that. I neither do I disagree with naming City Hall structure, Crispus Attucks Hall, which has no name right now.
Right.
Or naming, another suggestion was the State House, the old State House, where Crispus Attucks was murdered, as Crispus Attucks Plaza.
Yeah.
So I'm not opposed to those other ideas. What I am most in favor of is lifting the historical narrative of Boston in such a way that we're able to grapple with our racial problems.
Yeah.
The evidence is just so clear. I mentioned the Boston Globe series. That is not disconnected with the past. If we can find some narratives, some tropes, some metaphors to lift up in substantive ways, such as changing the name of Faneuil Hall to Crispus Attucks Hall, then we'll all be a better Boston for generations. generations to come.
Let's take
While this idea might be radical, it might be the best medicine for us.
We've known a little bit about radicalism here, too. So I think we should talk about radical ideas. I like it. Let's take a couple calls here. Beth is calling from Natick. You're on the air, Beth.
Yes, hi. I am calling as a historian by training and background, and I really do feel that it's important to lay these stories, these histories, these parts of the same person or the same experience side by side, and to really add to rather than banish people from our history, and to add the story of Peter Faneuil's other side, because I feel concerned if we marginalize people who rightly, you know, did horrible, terrible things, but if we just eliminate them from the story, it gives us a sense that people, as your guest said, who have both good and bad in them, can do things like this. Someone who is very self-serving can also be selfless in some ways, and we need to be able to hold that, that we're all capable of both wonderful and terrible acts. And so I feel like contextualization is the way to go rather than elimination.
Beth, thank you. I'm going to jump in. Thank you so much for your call. And Stephen and Kevin, you want to respond?
I really agree with that. And I think that there's, in this moment when we're starting to look at the way we memorialize things through the built form, this discussion is coming at the same time we're looking at Confederate monuments, mm-hmm. right? And so there's a way in which sometimes people are conflating Faneuil Hall with a Confederate monument.
That's right.
And there's a difference there that Peter Faneuil actually built Faneuil Hall, and it was built extant while he was alive, right? Those Confederate monuments, as everybody knows, were built in response to the Civil Rights era. They were built by white citizens' councils. They were built as mustering places for the Klan. And so those things, when they come down, I don't lose any sleep about it. I actually think that maybe they should stay up. And what we should do is make a plaque large enough to be seen from space that says this object was put here by white supremacists to intimidate black citizens. Hmm. It stands here today as a monument to our shame. So I am all for contextualization. Ooh, I can't even say that today. I'm all for context, but I'm also very much interested in understanding how artists connect with municipal spaces and respond to history through the built form.
Kevin?
Well, I think that I'm repeating myself a little bit. It's important to raise up narratives that counter longstanding narratives in order for us to move forward. That's what all this is about. Not about erasing history, but it's about challenging ourselves and challenging another generation of Bostonians to confront the issue of racism and how important it is for us to wrestle with it, struggle with it, confront each of with it in order to make progress. Otherwise, I'm afraid that we won't. I'm not sure if Boston is racially better now in 2018 than it was in 1973 during the height of the busing. All indications suggest that it's not. So how do you get from one place to the other is the argument I'm putting on the table. I'm all for memorials, but I'm very much committed to raising important, critical, civic issues that go to the heart of the matter. And what goes to the heart of the matter in Boston than the issue of liberty and freedom and democracy? We don't grapple with a place like Faneuil Hall, which is actually a patina of racism, a patina of slavery, a patina, you know, blood of black people are bounded in the ground. So how do you get to talking about democracy in 2000?
I really, really think you get to it through the creation of images and objects. I really do believe this because you think about Michelle Obama. When she got so much heat for saying, I live in a house that was built by slaves.
Yeah.
So like almost every black person I know knew that. Like I knew that the White House was built by slaves. But there's all these other people who did not know that. And they were so hurt that she brought that up. How could she say that? That's the truth. And there's a whole bunch of people who do not want to live with the truth.
Yeah.
And it's my job.
Yeah, I don't think we disagree, yeah.
And it's my job as someone who makes things. I can make you pay attention. And I can make you pay attention to the truth. And I think the hard thing for a lot of people is the truth is not comfortable. The truth does not privilege anyone. The truth is simply the truth. And I understand what you're saying about the patina of racism in this city. I think that there's a way in which having artists interact with the apparatus of the city through a lens of has exposed a lot of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you know, I hate to say this, but we are flat out of time.
We just started.
I know. This is the longest segment of the show today.
You do this to me every time I'm on this show.
And we've got tons of callers. I'm so sorry I can't get to you. Call earlier next time.
Call Meghna at home.
I don't have a landline, so sorry. You can't call me at home. But you know what I want to do? I want to actually end with the quotation that I started off with, because I think Frederick Douglass, brilliantly in 1849, at Faneuil Hall, really nails it when he said, with 18 million then of free men, meaning free white men, standing upon the quivering hearts of 3 million slaves, my sympathies, of course, must be with the oppressed. I am among them, and you are treading them beneath your feet.
Right.
Whether we knew it or not, today, standing on the ground of Faneuil Hall. So,
absolutely.
Frederick Douglass there. Kevin Peterson, founder and executive director of the New Democracy Coalition, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
And Stephen Locke, artist in residence for the City of Boston and a professor at Mass Art. Thank you as well.
Thank you, Meghna. Thank you, Kevin.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.